My last guest this week, certainly not least, is Aisha Hunt, founder of Kelly Hunt PLLC, which is a law firm specializing in helping asset managers launch, manage, and grow ETFs. They also handle mutual funds, interval funds, and other investment products. And Aisha's past experience includes working with some of the largest asset managers in the country, Dodge & Cox, Wells Fargo. She also served as general counsel for both Alps and Vidant Financial, and she's now joining me via phone. Aisha, it's an absolute pleasure. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Nate. Thanks for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
All right. So I have to tell you, I'm like a kid on Christmas morning here. I'm not going to wait around. We have to jump right in and talk Bitcoin ETFs. So as I understand it, you represented Vidant Investment Advisory, who's a sub-advisor on the Valkyrie Bitcoin Strategy ETF, ticker BTF. Obviously, we did see some progress last year with the first Bitcoin futures ETFs coming to market, but there's still no spot Bitcoin ETF. Now, nearly 9 years after the first spot filing, as a matter of fact, the SEC just rejected another filing last week. What has been your take on all this, and where do you think the SEC currently stands on a spot ETF?
Well, Nate, I'm actually working on a regulatory path to launch a spot Bitcoin ETF, and my work has been based on really listening to SEC Chairman Gensler and SEC staff and their concerns around price manipulation on foreign cryptocurrency markets, as well as various safeguards that need to be in place, such as surveillance agreements. I think it's going to be challenging for ETF issuers to continue to propose the same ETF structure. I think a lot of ETF issuers have done a phenomenal job with educational efforts with the SEC staff. I think it's important to build on those educational efforts, but to also propose a more creative structure that more sufficiently addresses the SEC's concerns. So I think it's to be continued, and I think we will get a spot Bitcoin ETF over the finish line.
Have you followed any of the other angles that some of the other ETF issuers out there have pursued? So I'll give you an example. Grayscale, who is going down this path of an APA violation. Do you think that's something that the SEC will seriously consider? I mean, how much legal wherewithal is behind something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really an unprecedented strategy to publicly, address the SEC in a manner that is tantamount to challenging them with respect to compliance with applicable laws. I think that there's a path where you can, spend time with the SEC staff and really get them comfortable with a more creative structure that specifically addresses the concerns I mentioned with respect to, price manipulation on foreign currency exchanges and, other safeguards that should be in place. And so I don't think that the approach of asking the SEC to consider whether or not they're in compliance with applicable law is the optimal approach.
So do you think this ultimately comes down to the regulatory framework in place at the crypto exchanges? I mean, I feel like to a large degree, ETF issuers' hands are tied, that until the SEC just gets more comfortable with that regulation in place at crypto exchanges, it really doesn't matter what ETF issuers do. What do you think about that?
You know, I want my firm, Kelly Hunt, to be known for relentless creativity to help managers bring novel products to market. And so what I've been doing is really thinking through various financial product precedents in the financial services universe, as well as learnings from various foreign jurisdictions. I think that attorneys should try to be a little bit more creative about the structures that are being proposed. I think it's difficult to continue to repeatedly propose the same structure when that structure has been, assessed from the SEC's perspective as having deficiencies with respect to, safeguards and other concerns that the SEC staff has articulated. So I really think it's important to, spot on address the concerns, and I don't think you can continue to address those concerns by proposing the same product structure. I think it really requires more creativity from the legal, service providers.
So just to be clear, before we move on here, I mean, how optimistic are you that a spot Bitcoin ETF will ultimately get approved at some point?
I'm fairly optimistic. I think that the SEC staff is comfortable with Bitcoin being in an underlying portfolio. I think it's just prior to lending the 40 Act wrapper with various investor protections, there really needs to be additional safeguards in place. And so I think it's important to create spot Bitcoin exposure in a way that's a little bit more creative than what's currently being proposed.
All right, so let's touch on some of the other major topics impacting the ETF industry right now. Mutual fund ETF conversions. That's clearly a big topic right now. We saw the first conversions in 2021. I think most industry observers expect a significant uptick this year. How cumbersome is that from a legal standpoint?
You know, the real issue is how secret is your secret sauce, right? Because that's the first decision you have to make, is whether you're willing to disclose your portfolio holdings on a daily basis. And to the extent you feel your investment strategy is such that you really don't want to disclose your portfolio holdings on a daily basis, you want to shield that portfolio, you really need to make the determination of whether you're going to leverage one of the models that allows for shielding your portfolio. And when you're due diligencing those models, you want to make sure that those models are actually viable and that the plumbing has been worked out to support those models. I think, you know, the other aspects of a mutual fund to ETF conversion include, you know, considering whether you're going to do a direct conversion or merger, and, you know, to what extent do you need shareholder approval in addition to board approval, and how easy would it be to obtain shareholder approval through a proxy solicitation process. I think other, you know, potential steps that can be a little challenging for some funds is really adjusting the mutual fund portfolio to be compliant with the conditions of any applicable exemptive relief, consolidating share classes to accommodate the typical single class structure of ETFs, and arranging for mutual fund shareholders to either designate or establish brokerage accounts. I think that those steps can be a little challenging if they're not, you know, really fleshed out and potential you know, roadblocks aren't identified in advance, so that you can proactively and aggressively address those issues at the forefront of the process.
And just out of curiosity, is your firm seeing an uptick in demand here, just a rise in inbound inquiries to get mutual fund ETF conversions accomplished?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm getting calls from multi-hundred billion dollar mutual fund managers that are looking at converting or, you know, merging existing mutual fund products into ETF shells to accomplish what is equivalent to a conversion. And it's been certainly a significant uptick. I launched my firm in September, and I've been fielding those calls ever since. So I do think that there's a significant interest. And in addition to, you know, the large you know, mutual fund families, I think we're also seeing a number of boutique mutual fund shops looking at either converting product or building out new ETF product suites. So definitely unprecedented demand right now for, you know, understanding the process for conversions or mergers, and it's been a really exciting time to be a part of that.
Sort of on a similar topic, just in terms of this uptick in demand, I think really just for the ETF wrapper in general, there's been a lot of discussion around the rise of independent ETF issuers. Now, I think this started following the 2019 ETF rule, right? That really got things going by leveling the playing field. And then I also think the rise of white label issuers has helped reduce costs and reduce headaches involved with launching an ETF. But I'm curious from your perspective, with a lot of new players getting involved in the marketplace, are you seeing issuers trying to take shortcuts on the legal side? You know, maybe assume they know more than they do? And if so, what are some of the implications of that?
Yeah, I think it's critical to start with a knowledgeable law firm that can help you navigate the ETF ecosystem. It's very different from, you know, other financial services spaces, different from, you know, mutual fund space. It's important to understand how you're going to enter into the ETF industry. A number of ETF issuers have landed into the industry in different ways, and in retrospect, they wish they had really thought through their various options. And we've seen, you know, a number of folks enter through being an index provider and engaging a white label investment advisor. We've seen folks use turnkey platforms as well as just launching standalone ETF families. I think, you know, for larger managers that are really committed to internally building out their infrastructure and adding the headcount, you know, launching a standalone ETF family is definitely a viable option. I think most managers have a stronger preference for not adding the headcount and not building internally the infrastructure required, but rather using a turnkey platform where all of the services that you need to launch an ETF are bundled in that platform. And I think that, you know, to accommodate cutting-edge ETF strategies, we really are seeing the next wave of ETF service providers and established ETF service providers that are really willing to disrupt their own business models. You know, the industry is light on deep ETF expertise during a time of unprecedented demand right now, And we really need to reimagine how we help establish ETF managers as well as new entrants launch ETFs. And I'm really excited that in the coming months, I'll be launching a platform with some strategic partners to really provide a turnkey solution that I believe leverages, you know, industry-leading service providers and will provide really a path that is well thought out in due diligence that most ETF managers or entrants could consider in terms of launching in a cost-effective, efficient manner.
Just a couple minutes left here, but on that note, you know, I spend a lot of time discussing the growth of ETFs on this podcast, right? The record inflows, record launches, all of the innovation occurring. And clearly we see that carry over to other parts of the ETF ecosystem, market makers, authorized participants, the white label providers, which we just touched on. And we noted earlier how you are seeing this uptick in growth and demand around mutual fund to ETF conversions. I'm just curious on the legal side. I'm always fascinated when I visit with different people within the ETF ecosystem. Like, how do you differentiate on the legal side? When you're going to market, how do you articulate your value proposition and try to stand out from the crowd? Because again, we're going to see a lot more demand. We are seeing a lot more demand come into the ETF marketplace. So there's going to be much greater demand for your services. How do you differentiate there?
So, you know, I think a lot of ETF service providers do a great job, including law firms, of pitching, you know, their services. And then when ETF managers start onboarding or engaging those services, they're often told, you know, what the service providers, what the law firms can't do or what they can't do. And what I want to do is really bring that relentless creativity that I mentioned and flexibility to the market to be able to help managers, you know, be the first to launch certain novel products and to really work with them in a way that complements their business model. So for some of my clients, I provide traditional legal services. For other clients, I serve as external general counsel. Maybe they just want, you know, outside, you know, general counsel to be able to help them work through the product development initiative, not necessarily to just execute on a product development initiative. And so I'm trying to be very flexible and working with managers in a way that meets them where they are and really addresses their wants and needs based on their business model. I also am very proud that my law firm is the first women and minority-owned asset management law firm that offers 40 Act legal services. And, which is interesting, my firm is the first firm that will be accepting cryptocurrency as payment. And obviously, that's limited to certain cryptocurrency, but I think that's an exciting way to support the asset class.
100%. Such a fantastic story, Aisha. Really enjoyed hearing your perspective this week. We may need to have you on periodically to update listeners on the status of a Bitcoin ETF, but really enjoy this. Thank you for joining me this week.
Thank you, Nate, for having me. I really appreciate it.
That was Aisha Hunt, founder of Kelly Hunt, PLLC.